This is OTB AM.
Can Cork out Kerry again? Here I am asking two Kerry men. I'm stupid. I mean, it's the stupidest question I've ever asked in my life. You're both going to be, oh, yeah, of course.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Weekdays from 7.30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio. Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
Delighted to say that Caoimhe O'Neill of The Athletic joins us on the line. Good morning to you, Caoimhe.
Morning. You okay?
Thanks. We've just been debating that whether the game tonight goes ahead and what it looks like and all that type of thing. What are you hearing?
My colleague Greg Evans at The Athletic sort of reported last night that Villa are likely to play the under-23 team tonight. So it does possibly look likely that it's going to be going ahead, but obviously Villa won't be playing the first team. It'll be a lot of sort of youth players that will be called up into the game, which is kind of similar to when Liverpool had to play that League Cup fixture when they were in Qatar last year for the Club World Cup. So it's kind of weird though. The tables have turned a little bit here, but obviously, you know, it's very concerning for Villa as it is for, you know, football at the minute with coronavirus. The cases just seem to be increasing, and obviously after the Christmas period, now we've gone into another lockdown, and you know, it is a little bit starting to get a little bit worrying, isn't it? Liverpool were set to travel down today anyway. They were always planning to travel down on the day of the game, and you know, what's coming out of Liverpool is that they're, you know, happy to play the game, and that was always going to be you know, the plan to travel down. They weren't cancelling any plans. And then I think the FA are going to probably look at it today and see whether it's sort of reasonable for the game to go ahead. So I think we're sort of still waiting, but it does seem likely that if Villa do play, it won't be obviously with a full-strength team. But we thought that Liverpool probably wouldn't be playing a full-strength team anyway with, you know, a lot of players needing game time and a lot of players needing a rest.
Mm. And like Liverpool might reciprocate, Caoimhe, obviously, given that the injuries list that they have, a very big game on the horizon and the knowledge that Villa are under strength. Possibility that Liverpool just reciprocate with playing a vastly under strength team?
Yeah, I mean, you always imagine Jurgen Klopp to play those on the periphery of a squad just for game time more so. And obviously, you know, it's been such a tricky period for Liverpool to navigate through this, you know, web of injuries. And, you know, with a lot of players coming back, I think Klopp will be looking to get them some minutes. You'd think that maybe he'll opt for some younger players. Maybe we'll see Nath Phillips and Reece Williams play together at centre-half. You know, two actual centre-backs playing the role would be interesting to see, wouldn't it? Especially after, obviously, defeat to Southampton where there was just midfielders everywhere. I think it'll be interesting. The likes of Curtis Jones will probably get a game. We saw Shaqiri come on. Obviously Minamino, you know, players like this, Divock Origi, you'd expect to start the game. So I think, you know, Liverpool won't see this as an opportunity to sort of play a stronger team. I think Klopp was always going to play, you know, an understrength squad almost, but you know, it'll still be a strong side with a mix of youngsters.
That centre-back position is going to be quite interesting tonight to actually see Phillips and Williams play together in that team. Do you have a sense of who's ahead in the pecking order and what they need to do to actually get a starting berth against Manchester United?
I mean, I think it sort of set them both back, didn't it? Obviously not starting against Southampton. It kind of signalled maybe Klopp doesn't trust them as much, but obviously Southampton pressed so well. You know, that was on full display, wasn't it, on Monday? And I thought maybe their inexperience would have been costly, but it turns out, you know, Jordan Henderson probably, you know, was a cost for that first goal, wasn't he? Well, the only goal. So I feel like the decision to play Klopp was Henderson was quite interesting by Klopp, because then it kind of made you think, well, does he trust Williams and Phillips enough? And I honestly do think he does. It was just that particular game when he knew Southampton were going to be pressing from the front that he thought it best maybe to, you know, to opt for Henderson, who's more experienced, obviously not a centre-half, but, you know, as Liverpool's captain. In terms of pecking order between Reece Williams and Phillips, Nat Phillips, you'd probably suggest Nat Phillips has more experience. He was out on loan last season and won promotion to the Bundesliga, I think. And obviously, Reece Williams was on loan at Kidderminster. So, they've both been out there in the real world and got a real taste of football before, obviously, the pandemic. And Reece Williams is a little bit older, a bit younger than Nat Phillips. So, there's still a little bit of his development to go, but I think they're both players Klopp has like turned to in recent weeks and have put in amazing performances. So, I wouldn't doubt that he'll give them a chance tonight, maybe. I think with obviously Diogo Jota getting injured in that sort of dead rubber against Midtjylland, Klopp won't want to risk any other players. Because obviously, Jota, what a phenomenal start he had to Liverpool season, and then getting injured in a game that didn't really matter was, has proved costly to Liverpool on the goal front because they've suffered scoring, haven't they? So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see the lineup tonight. But I think, both Williams and Phillips have impressed Klopp in what they've done, and they'll have to, won't they? Because it doesn't, the talk coming out is sort of that Liverpool won't be signing a new centre-half this month.
So they're not going to dip into the market then, and they're going to wait until the summer to make a move in that department?
Well, Klopp said himself yesterday it's not likely that Liverpool will make a move for a centre-half. He said that he's not ruling it out, but at this moment in time it doesn't look likely, and we've been hearing that for a while now, and I think that annoys fans, doesn't it? Because they think, well, if you've got a problem, just fix it. But at the same time, obviously, there's a lot of financial situations going on for a lot of clubs now. Obviously, in COVID times, it's an interesting one, isn't it? And I think, you've seen Arsenal take out a loan yesterday. Clubs are probably going to be struggling financially moving forward because of, obviously, the match day hit has been taken away from them. And obviously, other teams are less likely to be wanting to buy players this month, as the summer sort of carried on as normal, didn't it, almost? But I feel like now we're seeing almost like the hit of COVID and how it's affected football, which it'll probably, it's been a quiet month already in the window, and it'll probably continue to be that way. Even in terms of outgoing to Liverpool, you probably won't see anyone leave, and as Klopp said, it probably won't be likely that they'll sign anyone.
It's a tricky one as well, because they have a situation where if everybody's fully fit, the defender they would need to sign would have to be pretty extraordinary to actually start at centre-back for Liverpool. So it would be a six-month deal, really, if they were to get somebody in, assuming everybody comes back to full fitness come the summertime. Just on what's actually happened this week then, in the aftermath of the time Liverpool have last played, it kind of felt like the build-up to Manchester United against Manchester City was the build-up to Manchester United against Liverpool. You had Solskjaer hitting back at what Klopp was saying on Monday night about the amount of penalties that United have got over the last few years. And I kind of felt that he had a little bit of a jab at Liverpool as a club, kind of talked about facts in his press conference as if to compare Jurgen Klopp to Rafa Benitez. Was Jurgen Klopp Benitez-esque in his comments on Monday night?
No, I think anything Klopp says is always going to make a headline, isn't it? Like any, manager of the league. And obviously after a defeat, it was only going to, further that. I think he sort of just said what is frustrating fans at the minute. He probably can feel that, they are aware of social media, I think. And it's just like a feeling at the minute that obviously United, among all fans, I think a lot of people think they do win a hell of a lot of penalties. And I think Liverpool have had five themselves this season, is it? And United have had six, so they're not far behind in terms of winning penalties. But I think that it's probably got to Klopp and his team thinking that sometimes it just feels like there was a moment against Newcastle where the goalkeeper grabs Mane's leg, and then obviously on Monday there was a moment where Mane's brought down, and there was actual contact there. But obviously, it's just sort of one of them at the minute. Liverpool aren't scoring goals from open play, and kind of feel like a penalty would be helpful at this moment in time. But look, I think Klopp's comments are just Klopp, isn't it? After the game, he's always going to, you know, I think he's blamed stuff on the weather before and people have just taken it and ran with it. It's like he says sort of a throwaway line and it becomes this big thing. I don't think he's necessarily just sitting at home thinking about United and penalties all the time. I just think it was a sort of throwaway line and sort of just hinting at what everyone's feeling at the minute, you know, probably the club and the fans. You know, if Liverpool could win some more penalties, that would be great, wouldn't it? But no, I think the main concern for Liverpool would be not United's penalty record, but their own scoring record and how much they just need to improve on that attack. Because since Jota, his injury, it just seems to have gone really flat. And, you know, you'd expect them players like Salah, Mane and Firmino to be scoring a lot of goals a game, particularly after that Crystal Palace game, which obviously followed the late win against Spurs. You know, Liverpool fans felt that this was sort of Liverpool coming into a really good period, and then it just, you know, I think they've scored one goal since then, and you know, they've dropped 7 points, and it's you know, it's been quite pitiful at times and excruciating to watch for fans. But you know, this is an incredible team who are missing a lot of incredible players, and you know, I think fans know that it will improve soon enough, and I mean, it has to, doesn't it? Because obviously Manchester City now are just looking smoking hot again.
Yeah. Is there a sense, just on that point, that Klopp is volatile is not the word I'm looking for, but in that way, and we had Daniel Harris on during the week, and he was talking about the fact that Klopp, in his opinion, isn't Ferguson in the terms of the tone of what he's saying, or the timing, maybe more importantly, of what he's saying in a title race, but that, like, Klopp, and we've seen it obviously recently enough with the Roy Keane comments on Sky when he comes on, and he's saying, actually it was interesting to hear Jordan Henderson talk about them after the Southampton game as being sloppy, given that that was the word that Roy Keane had used at some point previously, but that he is a little bit get-at-able in that way, Cuiva.
I think it's always interesting after a defeat, you know. I think, you know, we saw the interview with Klopp, was it after the Merseyside derby, and he was less than happy, obviously, because the game ended in such dramatic fashion and Liverpool were denied what possibly should have been a winning goal late at the end. And you know, there've been moments, haven't there, I think, after tough games. I think it's just sort of a letting off of pressure almost. I mean, he's got one of the biggest jobs in football, and I think sometimes, you know, he will speak his mind straight away, and I think that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I think sometimes he probably forgets how it maybe will be, you know, interpreted. And a lot of the time, you know, people take what he says and run with it. I don't think you can get at him in terms of his mentality. You know, Liverpool are going through a bit of a weak spot at the minute, and you know, that might be coming across even in you know, post-match interviews from the captain and Klopp himself. But I don't think, you know, it's something that is a weakness almost. I think him saying it is probably important, because then maybe does it sort of become this sort of thing now, people will think more of it. You know, I'm not too sure. I thought Andre Mariner had a really poor performance. The referee, it was for the Southampton game. Sometimes you've just got to say things how they are and in the hope that they will change. So, you know, for him to talk about penalties, I think it's just in the hope that Liverpool, you know, maybe will, going forward, get some more. And yeah, I think, you know, it is just a dip at the minute for the club itself. It's not anything massively to do with Klopp or whatever. You know, I think they're working on these things, and you know, I think they've shown that the mentality they've had in the past, you know, 18 months to 2 years is that it's, you know, one of real strength. So I think, you know, they'll pick that up sooner or later. It's just been a bit of a tough time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has, and the interesting game obviously on the horizon that we might talk to you about at some point sooner to it as well. I did think that Klopp heard, in my mind, heard Henderson use the word sloppy and cringed a bit, but we might come back to that again. You did write, Cuiva, we wanted to ask you about, you wrote a very thoughtful piece on The Athletic this week about the abuse directed at Karen Carney last month. A very thoughtful piece that you'd obviously put a lot of time into crafting and thinking about how you would craft it. I wondered if you almost had a fatigue at almost having to still write those sort of pieces.
To be honest, I'll be honest with you, I didn't want to write it because I knew straight away that it would open me up to sort of a a similar, no, I mean, she got a lot of abuse and it was like really horrible to see. And I knew that sort of, you know, standing up for it, which is obviously what I want to do because I'm a woman in football and, you know, I feel like any abuse that any female pundit or player or anyone involved in the game suffers is wrong, isn't it? So I really wanted to write it, but at the same time, I didn't know what to write because I was almost afraid that I would suffer some abuse. And, you know, I did get some on the back of it and, you know, that's not right, but I feel like that's not the issue here. I kind of wanted to make the point that, you know, women are in football, you know, whether anyone likes it or not. And I just feel like, you know, I just wish we were just, you know, there wasn't a conversation almost and we could just like move forward and not be sort of questioned in a different kind of way. I just sort of want that equal playing field almost and, you know, for it to be not a conversation and for, you know, when a woman says something that, you know, people don't agree with and that's absolutely fair, you know, we're pundits are there to have their opinion and they don't always have to be agreed with. But for when you disagree with a female pundit, you don't have to be sexist or misogynist in your, you know, your disagreement with them because, you know, it borders on the line of really unacceptable behaviour. And, you know, I felt like I needed to write something just to sort of, you know, stick my head out a little bit and say, you know, this is how it feels and it's not always nice. And, you know, sometimes I find myself watching my own opinion on social media just because if I write something, sometimes you can be, you know, targeted a little bit more. I don't know, because, you know, people think that they've got more of a right to tell you, you know, their opinion or whatever. And, you know, I love people's opinions and I just wish that, like, sometimes, like, that opinion in particular and that piece, it did draw a lot of heat towards me and it was, you know, an interesting experience to go through just to get a sliver of the taste of probably what Karen Carney had received that made her come off Twitter. You know, it's really unacceptable behaviour and, you know, I think, you know, the point that I made in the piece is that we just... You know, it's not like about us being women or anything. We just kind of want to be accepted that we absolutely love football. We're here because this is our passion and nothing else. Like, and when it comes down to abuse, I mean, in any sort of any discrimination's wrong. And yeah, I just think it was hard for me to write it, but I just kind of wanted to, you know, to be someone who said, you know, this is wrong and to stick up for it because I didn't want to sort of, I didn't want to stick my head up, but then I thought, you know, this is something that I'm really passionate about. Maybe it'll give other women and other people strength. And, you know, a lot of people did message me to say, oh, I didn't really think of it like that and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think more people took something from it than more people were angered by it. So that was good. But yeah, we keep moving forward.
Well done on writing the piece and written for the right reasons and a very good read and recommend that people go and check it out. And it's like, it's so disheartening to hear, not in the slightest bit surprising, I have to say, and maybe that's the grim aspect of all of this, that you received abuse yourself off the back of it. And I don't know, like, we try to understand the root of where abuse like that is coming from. And it's not just a social media thing. Obviously, it's those tweets or those whatever have to be written by somebody. It's hard to know how to, like, what the solution is or how to progress the conversation to the point that you can engage the type of people that are going to respond like that.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to not comment back to anything negative just because, I mean, I don't think it ever helps, does it? So I'll only really, you know, interact with people who are positive. And, you know, sometimes I will interact with people to debate things. And, you know, that's part of why we like social media, because, you know, we can speak to people all over the world and debate things. But obviously, you know, when you receive abuse, it does make you feel not very good about yourself. You know, you can read a comment online and this is just not me. This is anyone. And, you know, I think a point I'd probably like to make is just think before you tweet, isn't it? You know, there are people on the other end there. And that's probably why I don't reply to people, because I don't want to berate anyone for anything, even if they've, you know, they've been less nice to me. I just think, you know, there's a lot going on in the world right now. And I don't think we need to be nasty to each other online, do we? Definitely got to be a bit more positive, I think. And just kind of think, you know, the sort of damaging effect I think social media can have. Like, sometimes, like, you'll read a comment, like, I'll read a comment and it'll just really, like, you know, it'll stress me out for a few hours, or I'll just be, like, you know, really down in the dumps off it. And I think, you know, for anyone to make you feel that way that you don't know is pretty crazy, isn't it? But, bonkers. You know, that's the effect of social media, and that'll be for a lot of people, you know, from footballers to just anyone online. You know, it can make you not feel good about yourself, and, you know, that's never a good thing.
Yeah, it's bonkers and it's not right. And well done for standing up to it. And think before your tweet, is probably a good message to get behind. Caoimhe, thanks a million.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Cheers. Thanks a lot. Caoimhe O'Neill of The Athletic there, joining us to talk all things Liverpool and beyond, as you've been hearing as well.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.